Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Truth and Movies. Today, we take a chance on the long-awaited sequel to 2008's hit ABBA musical Mamma Mia. Here we go again, but will our critics be crying out Gimme 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 or SOS this time round?
I've decided to commit to being a grandmother.
Also this week, Joe Cole, no, not that one, plays a Scouse Scally banged up in Bangkok in hard-hitting Thai prison drama A Prayer Before Dawn.
I'm a boxer, I can show you I can fight. I need to fight.
There's all that and amore as in Film Club we turn back time to sing the praises of Norman Jewison's seminal New York rom-com Moonstruck, featuring the veritable dream team of Cher, Nick Cage and Martin Scorsese's mum.
You love him, Loretta?
No.
Good. When you love him, they drive you crazy.
It's Truth and Movies, a Little White Lies podcast. Hello and welcome to Truth and Movies. I'm Adam Woodward and I'm delighted to be joined today by Hannah Woodhead. Hello.
Hi.
And Manuela Lazic.
Hello. Hello.
I know you guys, as well as I am, really keen to get stuck into Mamma Mia.
Oh, yeah.
But before we do, I got a little bit of correspondence this week from Anton McConville. He just writes in to say, wanted to make a comment about Incredibles 2. I think it was Hannah who noted that it didn't reflect today, and I can see that a bit. But when I watched it, I thought the big theme was fake news, which is very much about today. I also thought, as a dad, that it captured a lot of the struggles a parent has, themes around how to handle, especially gifted children, comparisons between a dad and a mum's approach to parenting. Hannah?
I didn't get that fake news thing at all from it. I don't know. Have I missed the whole point of it?
Well, I threw that to you because I actually haven't seen Incredibles.
Yeah, me neither. Sorry.
I don't know. The whole concept of the villain is he can enslave people through their TV screens. So I just thought it was kind of like the way the media controls people thing, which I guess is a little bit fake newsy.
Okay, but, yeah.
I mean, I obviously, as I am not a parent, so I have no idea how it reflects the intricacies of being a dad or a mum. But that's lovely if a parent connected it within that way.
Yeah, thank you, Anton, for writing
that. Yeah, it's a lovely message.
Interesting take. As ever, if you do want to get in touch with us, any takes you've got on any films we've discussed, or if you just want to say hello, the email address is truthandmovies@tcolondon.com, and we're also on Twitter at LWLights. Right, let's get on with Mamma Mia. Here we go again. Mamma Mia, here we go again. This is the, of course, long-awaited sequel to 2008's hit musical in which Amanda Seyfried's Sophie this time round learns about her mother's past while pregnant herself. Here's a clip from the film.
I've decided to commit to being a grandmother.
Oh, what? 25 years too late.
I say we move past that. You know, so if being a grudge holder makes you fat... So let's just concentrate on the here and now and me stepping up to becoming a good grandmother.
A great grandmother.
Thank you.
No, he's saying that... Wait, how do you know? Sky?
I didn't say anything. We agreed. So?
I only told Sam because he's my stepfather and also one-third of my real father.
I just told Bill. He's my best friend.
And I told Harry. He's father number three.
I told many, many people.
That's Colin Firth there at the end, not able to keep the secret to himself that is it Amanda Seyfried, Sophie, is pregnant in this film. And we basically experience that through, well, I think that's revealed quite late on, actually, isn't it, the pregnancy?
It is.
The whole film is actually about her connection with her mother, who's played by Meryl Streep, and a younger version of herself here by Lily James. So, Manuela, I want to come to you first, because you were actually at the world premiere of this on Tuesday. How was that?
It was amazing. And so, yeah, it's good that you put it out there first, because obviously seeing Cher in the flesh and Andy Garcia in the flesh, that may have made me biased. But I think the film is great. It does this amazing thing of being at once a sequel and a prequel, because it comes 10 years after the other one, but it's mostly about Meryl Streep's youth. And you know, I know we're not there for the story, really, but it really is fascinating how they managed to pull it off, like to tell the story of Meryl Streep, because the whole point of the first film is that it's a mystery what happened. Like, how can she not know which one is the dad? And it was all quite ambiguous. And here they managed to write the whole story of how that happened. And it's very convincing that she doesn't know. And it's not, it does that amazing thing as well of not condemning her for that at all. Like, she was, you know, young, living her life, traveling, and stuff happened. And she had a great time with all of them. And yeah, and then she made a decision of raising her daughter. And it's quite positive, like sex positive, and really centered on friendship and family and, you know, choosing your own path, whether other people think it's stupid or not. And yeah, it's really uplifting. And the songs are just really great, and they're really inserted in the story. Sometimes it's a bit tacky, like when Amanda Seyfried, at some point, she's singing One of Us, and she says, staring at the ceiling, and she's lying on the bed staring at the ceiling. Like, it's a bit it's a bit forced, but it's kind of, that's the pleasure of it as well, I think.
Yeah, it's a little bit shoehorned in sometimes. Yeah. The songs. But we'll come into the songs in a minute, because, as you say, this is 10 years in the making, or we've been waiting that long for this sequel.
Yeah, I don't know if they started, like, yeah. But yeah,
and I'm intrigued by that, because I must say, full disclosure, I haven't seen the first Mamma Mia film. Presumably, right. Had better things to do 10 years ago. But Hannah, I think you've seen it. Could you fill anyone in who hasn't seen the first one?
So the first one's this a story of Meryl Streep's Donna, who runs a hotel on this really lovely Greek island, and she lives with her daughter, played by Amanda Seyfried, Sophie, and they're having a party for Sophie's wedding. She's getting married to Dominic. It's so ridiculous. She's getting married to Dominic Cooper's Sky, and they're very much in love. But Sophie's always wondered who her dad is, because she's never known. So she's managed to track down three contenders, who are played by Colin Firth, Pierce Brosnan, and Stellan Skarsgård, and she invites them to the wedding to try and resolve the mystery of her parentage. And that's it. That's the story. And it's just 2 hours of kind of musical numbers, and it's, you know, it's good fun. It's fine if that's what you're into. It's very much like bridging the gap between young girls who like ABBA and their mums who like ABBA.
Yeah, it's definitely got something for everyone, I think.
Yeah.
And the prequel element of it is interesting, because it doesn't necessarily answer the questions that I suppose were lingering from that first film. But it's a really nice flashback into this character's life and the men she had these affairs with.
Yeah, it really leaves space for her complexity. Like, I was really afraid that it would be, you know, like, oh yeah, we're doing it for the fans, so we gotta give them an answer. And it's not doing that. It's just being like, let's look into this story and see what fun can come out of it. And it's really fun. And I think Lily James had a really tough thing to do. And I don't think she's very much like young Meryl Streep, but I mean, no one really is. But she does a really good job. She's got good energy, and yeah, she's cool. I like her.
I must say, I've not seen her in much. I think I missed her Cinderella.
Yeah, me too. I missed that.
But
yeah,
I think she's really a revelation in this. She does a lot of the heavy lifting story-wise. Yeah. She has a lot of the big centerpiece song moments in the film. It kind of made me think how much she's wasted in Baby Driver and has been wasted in a few other supporting roles she's been in.
I mean, a lot of things are wasted in Baby Driver. But, yeah.
She can really sing, though, which one of the sort of not complaints, but I think funny things about the first one is that most of the cast can't really sing. They're very, very committed, and that's great, but it is a kind of Russell Crowe in Les Mis moment where you're just like, oh, this is like they're trying their best, but it's not great. Mm. Whereas Lily James in this and Amanda Seyfried both are really good singers.
Yeah.
So it's not only fun because you know the songs, but because they're singing them quite well.
Yeah, even Pierce Brosnan has a go in this. I think he sings a line from SOS, is it?
So,
yeah, but he's kind of talking it. Like, he's not really singing.
And that's
really
a callback.
Cute.
Yeah, So in the first one, he sings that with Meryl Streep. Well, to Meryl Streep. And it's lovely. It's, like, my favourite bit, even though it is, like, very, very cheesy. So that, he does it again in this film as kind of, like, a callback to that. And it's quite, you know, it's quite sad. Yeah.
Yeah. I cried. Not at that moment, but in that movie at some point near the end, I was crying.
I think it's the wonderful thing about this film is it knows exactly what it is. And it's so clear from the start that all the cast are really game for it.
Mm.
And I mean, Hannah and I weren't at the premiere, but it felt like, you know, Cher's extended family and half the cast were probably in the audience, because every time, you know, a song started up, everyone just completely
people.
Went wild.
Everybody loves Cher.
As soon as she came, and I imagine it was like this at the world premiere as well, but as soon as she came on, everyone just like was applauding and like whooping. And it was...
That was crazy.
I think most of my enjoyment of this film came out of the audience I was watching it with, because everyone else was so clearly into it. Like, people were dancing, like they were like laughing at all the cheesy jokes.
Yeah.
And it is the kind of film that if I'd seen this at home for the first time, or if I'd seen it in a small screening room somewhere, I don't think I would have enjoyed
it
anywhere near as much as I did enjoy it.
Yeah, and it's like, I think it's also credit to the film itself, because the way it's built narratively is that there's so much going on that you kind of forget that there's more coming, like the Cher thing, you know, she comes in quite late. And it's not that you don't expect it, but it's, when it happens, it's such a joyous moment, and it's really well built, and she has this really beautiful moment, and I don't want to spoil it because it's too beautiful, but it's really, really special. And my, like, the crowd at the premiere was just losing their minds. Like, I was screaming, my throat hurt. It was great.
So you enjoyed it?
Yes.
Hannah, I think you enjoyed it.
I can't, like, as a film critic, I cannot say this is like a great piece of cinema, but it is incredibly enjoyable if you suspend all belief in time and space, because that's the other thing about... Someone pointed out on Twitter the fact that the first movie kind of forgets the 80s existed, because it's set in 2008, but Amanda Seyfried is meant to be 20. Mm. So that would place her being born in, like, what? The early 90s, I guess? And she was... Lily James was pregnant in 78. So what happened there? Like, there's like 12 years that don't exist. So, and this, in this, Amanda Seyfried says to Cher, you're 25 years too late to be a grandma. So I'm like, well, it's 10 years since Mamma Mia. So how old is she meant to be now?
I'm not sure that Cher is that much older than Meryl Streep either.
That's the other
thing. But we can look past that. But,
I mean, I don't even calculate. You know,
it is. You have to go with it, or you just go with it. You know,
you make an interesting point, because I think critics do tend to be quite snotty about films like this, and you always see a musical, especially, and this kind of rom com, always it's labelled.
Yeah,
The Greatest Showman is another example, but it gets labelled with terms like feel good, and it feels very like backhanded compliments. And actually, feel good is one of those terms that's a bit of a bugbear of mine.
Definitely,
but I think it's incredibly difficult to mount a film on this scale with this ensemble cast, give everyone their own part to play, and, you know, the songs sometimes are a bit shoehorned in, but definitely work. I mean, in terms of the amount of music in here, it's pretty much non-stop.
And I think it's really good job all around for the actors as well, because it's not every day that they get to do all these things. Like, they dance and they sing, and I think everyone is really good. Like, the young ones, the young boys are very, very good.
That cover, there's a Waterloo number, which I was, like, shrinking back into my seat. I was like, oh, no.
What, you didn't like it?
I really did not like it.
I really liked it. I think the guy was really good.
Really? No, I couldn't get on board with him. The rest of it, I kind of was like, okay, sure, whatever. But that one just really didn't work for me. But
I think there are moments where you kind of...
I think you're like, right,
bit,
though.
Yeah.
They are, like, everyone is kind of doing their bit. No one's, like, coasting by, you know. Everyone's fully committed to it.
Yeah, and I think also they, as you were saying, they know what film it is, because I think in this movie, compared to the first one, the jokes land much better, because everybody is kind of, like, yeah, we can't sing. Like, a lot of the older men especially. So I think the jokes really land, and some of them are really just silliness, and it's really joyful. It's really good. I can't wait for the sing-along.
Okay, let's go in with some scores then. Oh. Hannah, do you want to start?
It's like a three. Three's across the board for me. You know, I don't say that as like a bad thing. Though a three for me is not like an insult to a film. It's not something that I would ever choose to watch on my own at home. But like you say, a sing along screening of this would be a lot of fun. And
definitely,
if you watch movies for different reasons, and if I watch this because I want to be entertained, then sure, fine, whatever.
Manuela, you've crossed your arms in disgust.
No. I respect every opinion, but I think. There's nothing wrong with funny love songs. So I would say Anticipation 2, really, because I was like, Jesus, this is a prequel, sequel. Mm. No. And the first one wasn't great. But then Enjoyment 5, but I was at the premiere, so this is like cheating. But still, I think without that, I would have had probably 4. And in retrospect, I think 4, because it's not like a masterpiece, but it's very good. And I think we need more musicals in general. Not like meta musicals like La La Land, like proper musicals with talented people.
Okay, I think I'd go for a 2 for Anticipation as well, purely on the fact that I haven't seen the first film. Mm-hmm. Like ABBA as much as the next person, but wouldn't consider myself a super fan. But yeah, 4 at the time, and then possibly a 3 in retrospect. But it is, I mean, for all the ABBA haters out there, it is a very enjoyable film, and there's nothing wrong with going into a film like this, just completely letting yourself get swept away.
I think it's a gift for the summer.
I think it's, you know, as well, it's lovely that films like this exist, because for people who, and especially at Little White Lies, we can be a bit like highbrow about film, but this is a film that anyone can go and see and just enjoy. You don't have to. This isn't inaccessible.
No,
this is
sure.
a summer blockbuster. It's going to be in every single screen for the next 6 weeks. Mm. So go and see it. Take your kids.
You have to have high tolerance for ABBA, I suppose, but that's the only barrier you can
It's like
have.
Great cameo as well. I'm not sure which member of ABBA it is, but like he turns around and like winks at the camera.
Oh, yeah, both of them are in there.
Oh, the guys. At the end.
Yeah, they're all like, but they're kind of like obvious. So at the premiere, everybody was cheering like way before they're indicated in the movie. It was really funny.
Yeah, it's Benny and Bjorn.
Yes.
And they are very much the driving force creatively behind, I think, ABBA as obviously the musical group and the film.
They
both get executive
the
producer credits. Mm. They wrote the songs. And
they were the premiere.
Along with Tom Hanks and Rita, who I saw got executive producer credits. And I just really would love to know the story behind that. Are they just big fans of ABBA? Like,
I really don't understand. When I saw him there, I was like, is he? Does he have a cameo? Does he sing? But no, that's a shame.
A Tom Hanks musical, I think, is what we need next.
Sure. I mean, yeah.
They're making Cats into a musical, like a musical movie, which I'm here for that. I like Cats.
Well, and of course, we've got the Elton John biopic coming up and Bohemian Rhapsody
as well. Oh, yeah, of course.
It's
yeah,
a good time. If you like your kind of your big showpiece, 70s
your disco
pop.
And your glam rock.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like biopics as much as weird movies with a bunch of songs in them like that.
Yeah.
Like Saturday Night Fever is kind of like that.
In this as well, like, we never establish if ABBA exist or if,
exactly.
or if they just make these songs up on the spot, because Donna has this group, Donna and the Dynamites.
Yeah, they made those songs.
Yeah, it's like they made those songs, but there's a bit in this film where Donna is sad and she's going to sing a song and they're like, oh, sing what's in your heart. So she starts singing this very, very great. It's a great musical number. But I was like, well, how do they know what she's going to sing if she's just making this up? I'm very like, everyone joins in.
They're very good musicians and they just catch it. Just do it.
I think I just have to not think about this too much.
You're thinking too hard. Yeah, like the years and it's ABBA, it's Mamma Mia, it's music. Here we go again.
Here we go. Okay, well, I mean, that is Mamma Mia. Here we go again, in a nutshell. Yeah. So up next is A Prayer Before Dawn. A Prayer Before Dawn. This is John Stefan Sauvez, a true story of an English boxer incarcerated in one of Thailand's most notorious prisons, and he learns to fight in Muay Thai tournaments to earn his freedom. Here's a clip from the film.
I want to train. I'm a boxer, I can show you I can fight. I need to fight.
I've got no family, no money. Just give me this one chance. I want to fight.
Hey!
why you have a rupture is because of boxing and the massive abuse of drugs. Any more trauma, you could lead to death.
It's all I've got.
Well, that is the, I think, a clip from the trailer for A Prayer Before Dawn, and kudos to whoever managed to make that sound so action-packed, because it is quite a kind of slow, brooding film. There isn't a sort of conventional boxing montage, or you know, you have those like punch bag sounds there in the trailer, but it's actually quite a kind of slow, spacious film. Manuela, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, I mean, that really didn't do much for me at all. Like, I don't know, I was just it's just not like, I understand it was a real story and it's pretty tragic and it's really horrific in moments, but I didn't really connect with this movie at all. I found that its approach was a bit, you know, fly on the wall, and that's interesting, I suppose, but it just made, I just didn't feel anything for this. I just didn't connect to it. I don't know, it's not nothing much more interesting to say.
Hannah, you, I think you know a little bit more about the story on which it's based.
Yeah, I mean, I watched this and kind of went away and did a bit of reading, because I thought, like Manuela, I didn't really connect with this story, and I thought, well, this is based on a true story, and obviously this guy's, you know, he's written a whole book about this, and I'm not getting across, all this film is boxing, and you're not kind of getting any other information about what led this guy here. He gets arrested for drugs, I think, in the film.
Yeah.
And that's all it is. And I did a bit of reading about Billy Moore, who's the guy, the story, he wrote the book, and then it's based on his experiences in Thai prisons. So he was a boxer who had a pretty traumatic childhood. His father was quite abusive. And he went to Thailand and was arrested for stealing a mobile phone or something, sentenced to prison. And he took up boxing. He got addicted to drugs in prison. And he kind of turned his life around. In the end, I think the British embassy got involved and like got him transferred out of prison. Mm. And he turned his life around. Unfortunately, after he wrote the book, he was diagnosed with cancer, and he ended up in prison again because he kind of had a breakdown and went back to his old ways. So I think he missed the premiere of this film because he was in prison.
Oh, wow.
So, this is all like Liverpool Echo news that I was reading about this poor guy. But I feel like the film doesn't kind of get across what an interesting character he is and kind of this crazy life he's lived. It is just Joe Cole kind of brooding, and there's no way to connect with him. You don't know anything about him. He's very closed off, and he has this kind of like romance with this Thai woman in the prison who works in the sort of commissary. And even that feels quite like distant. You don't really care what happens.
Yeah. It's really tacked on.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really make it more emotional. I think the film suffers from trying too hard to be just raw, you know, just like, this is the raw stuff. This is how you fight. And those images of fights, I mean, I've never seen that before. Sure. But that didn't really do anything for me.
Well, I think you could say it's sort of authentic with a capital A, because it's obviously, you know, set in a real prison in Thailand. I think the supporting cast are mostly comprised of ex inmates, and the boxing you see and the Muay Thai is clearly real.
Yeah.
Joe Cole is a rising star in British acting, is obviously putting in a very committed performance. But I think a lot of that stuff, sometimes authenticity can be used to the point that it sort of ends up negating the story and the emotional connection you have with the characters. I definitely felt a distance here with the story.
Me too.
The film never quite gets over that. But
there's many times when I see a movie based on a true story and it's kind of like that, it doesn't do anything for me. I call it a cool story bro movie, because it's like, yeah, it's a cool story, like it happened, it's true. I don't think I needed to see a movie of this. Like, maybe the book is really engaging, because I don't know, maybe we're missing something about the point of view through the adaptation. Maybe there's something about, I don't know how the book is narrated. I don't know, it feels like there's something missing.
He also said in the interviews I've kind of read with him, he said that the prison was, there were a lot of foreign prisoners there. He wasn't the only British guy in the prison, which this film makes it feel like he's the only British guy there.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, there were a lot of foreigners there. They had their kind of own communities within the prison, and they were seen as a bit of an easy target because they weren't Thai. Mm. And there's kind of these nuances that I think get lost in the story. And it is this, here is Billy Moore, the one British man in this Thai prison, against the whole of like the Thai convict community, who are this like homogenous mass. None of them have got any personality beyond being heavily tattooed and pretty like corrupt. Yeah, even the prison officers are corrupt. Mm. And it, yeah, I was kind of offended that we only get one note in this film, which is it's really shit being in a Thai prison.
Yeah, it does spend a lot of time layering up these elements of the story, which just hammer home how harrowing his experience is. And there's scenes of like male rape and lots of drug abuse, and you know, none of it really is in service to the character or the story, but it is added, I think, just to drive home that feeling of this is quite bleak.
It feels a bit gratuitous, to be honest. Like those scenes of extreme violence, I was like, I didn't expect Thai prisons to be fun, so why are you showing me this in such a graphic way and elongated way?
Like, it's not a particularly shocking film.
Yeah. No, not really. It's kind of keeping it... At the same time, it's trying to be super authentic, and at the same time, it's kind of playing it safe, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's very strange.
Okay, let's...
I was just going to say the rape scenes in particular is a bit like... I thought were in quite poor taste, because it goes on for so long, and it doesn't serve to do anything. It doesn't serve to say something about his character. Mm-hmm. He just kind of looks shocked. Rape in prisons has kind of been this... We know this happens. This is a big issue, even in British prisons. And I kind of was hoping they would do something more interesting than just show it happening. Like, what am I supposed to learn from this? What am I supposed to take away from this?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Okay, so let's do some scores. Manuela?
I think probably 2 across the board. I mean, I didn't really have expectations. I didn't know about this movie. But, yeah, I didn't have a good time. I wouldn't watch it again. I wouldn't recommend it.
Bit of a contrast to Mamma Mia in terms of the...
Yeah, it's like the opposite, I suppose.
Yeah, for me, it's like... I mean, I get probably 3 in anticipation, because I think I quite like a good boxing movie. And I think the boxing scenes in it are, like, well choreographed, but it isn't anything new. It's just more of the same. So, yeah, it's like a 2 and a 2. I don't really know who this movie's for. And
good point.
I wouldn't watch it again.
I think off the back of less earnest, less sort of serious dramatic movies, more like genre movies like The Raid, we're used to this setting, we've seen this before. Even something like Only God Forgives, the Nicholas Winding Refn film, you see in that case particularly, you see a white male protagonist thrown into this situation having to kind of defend himself. So yeah, it doesn't feel particularly new or original, and I do think that is unfortunately to the detriment of this story. But yeah, I would say probably roughly the same as you, Hannah, for scores: 3 in anticipation, 2s for the other two. Joe Cole, though, I think he does give a committed performance, and keen to see what he does next.
I hope he gets a role with more nuance, I guess, because here he's just a bit aggressive and angry and shocked.
Okay, so that was A Prayer Before Dawn, and we're going to move on to Film Club next with Moonstruck.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
We'll be right back. Okay, Moonstruck is the 1987 story of Loretta Castorini, a bookkeeper from Brooklyn, New York, who finds herself in a difficult situation when she falls for the brother of the man she has agreed to marry. Here's a clip.
Are you proposing marriage to me?
Yes.
All right. You know I was married and that my husband died, but what you don't know is I think he and I had bad luck.
What do you mean?
Well, we got married at the city hall, and I think it gave bad luck the whole marriage.
I don't understand.
Right from the start, we didn't do it right, okay? Could you kneel down?
On the floor?
Yeah, on the floor.
This is a good suit.
I know that. I helped you pick it out. It came with two pairs of pants. You know, Johnny, it's for luck. I mean, a man proposes marriage to a woman, he should kneel down.
He's got him on his knees. He's ruining his suit.
Is that man praying?
So that was Cher and Danny Aiello in action. And obviously regular patrons of this parish will remember Danny Aiello from another film club, Hudson Hawk. I think he fares slightly better here, but he doesn't have a lot of luck, Manuela.
Oh, I think he's wonderful here. I love Danny Aiello. I think he's always a good idea to have in movies. And here he's really playing this really sheepish, scared Italian man who's just trying to do the right thing when you're an Italian man, which is like marry and do it right. But he's just a wet blanket. And I think to see him play that role is really powerful because, like, he was in, for instance, in Do the Right Thing is really aggressive. And, yeah, it's really good to see him explore his range that way. And obviously, opposite Cher, it's like this amazing vision. Two great people for me.
Yeah, so and it's a love triangle story, really.
Yeah.
And I guess diametric opposite to Daniela's character is Nicolas Cage playing his brother Ronnie.
I would struggle to choose.
I think one of the great character intros, possibly of all time. Mm. Hannah, let's set the scene for
so
us.
So good. So Loretta, having accepted the proposal, is asked to go and kind of make amends with Ronnie. And who there's some bad blood between the brothers about something that happened in the past, but Loretta doesn't have any information about what this is. So she goes down to the bakery where Ronnie works, and there's this great scene where he's like, you know, slaving over the ovens, and he turns around and it's Nicolas Cage. And obviously
young and ripped.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can only imagine what this must have been like for sort of teenage girls and young women going to see this film in the 80s. It was great for me as someone who's kind of only ever known Nicolas Cage in like National Treasure and Ghost Rider. I was very much like, oh my god, this is great, I'm here for this. But it is like this iconic like rom-com moment of that big reveal where it turns around and it's like the man of her dreams.
Yeah.
Like.
And the other reveal, of course, that he has a wooden hand.
Yeah, oh my god, it's
which
so good.
Is explained in the plot but then not really mentioned too much beyond that. I mean, you occasionally see him wearing a glove later on in the film, but it's such a bizarre character detail.
I think this screenplay is brilliant because, yeah, the wooden hand is mentioned once and we don't really know the details, but that's because it represents how when you go through life, you carry your scars, you carry your baggage from previous stuff, like relationships, and you keep pointing to it, being like, he took my hand, he took my wife, like, you know, like Nicolas Cage is doing in this movie. But Cher has the same problem. She's always being like, yeah, with my husband, my previous husband, we were not lucky, we didn't have any luck. It's really, this movie is really about realizing how much you project and you find excuses for your own misery, instead of just accepting that life is messy and sometimes you make mistakes and love is about breaking your heart, you know? That's the beautiful line that Nicolas Cage says at some point. It's really a movie about, you know, accepting to take a chance even if you've been hurt before. And so that's why Nicolas Cage has this wooden hand and he has to get over it, really, and come out of his oven.
Snap out of it, one might say.
Yeah. It's so beautiful.
It feels like a great New York movie as well, and there's so much texture and so many, you know, just scenes on the streets where ordinary, especially New York Italian Americans, are just in the crowd. And there's, I mentioned in the intro, Martin Scorsese's mother, who actually appears in a very brief cameo. Wow. in the bakery. I think she just like orders a loaf and then shuffles off. But wow, it's just like nice moments like that, I think, that really... Yeah. Add to the authenticity of the film in a good way.
I love the scene where Loretta goes to buy a bottle of champagne. After she's got engaged, she just like pops into this corner shop, and the husband and wife who run it are having this argument, and she's just there buying her wine. This love, it sets up this whole world, and we're getting to experience two small families like interactions within it. But you get a real sense of New York as a community, and specifically the Italian American community, which there's this tendency, especially within like the 70s and 80s, where, you know, you kind of think of Italian Americans as like the gangster movies. And this is very much like just a lovely movie about real people having real conversations and saying some really like wise and present things about love.
Yeah.
It's,
what more could you want, you know?
Yeah.
But it's true. There's all these moments where we just see cutaways of people on the street or whatever speaking in Italian. Like they literally, or like the older, the grandpa in the family, in Cher's family, is speaking in Italian most of the time. Like he doesn't even try to speak English. And that's so truthful. That's so realistic. Yeah. And no one, yeah, and he lives in the house because that's how they live. You know, the whole family lives in the same place. And they're just entrepreneurs. Like Loretta's dad is in plumbing, but he's kind of a scam. Like he's kind of asking for way too much money, and that's why they're so rich. And that's just the immigrant story as well, like just trying to make it with, you know, being a plumber. And it works because you're smart and you're street smart and you're a good person that people trust. It's really, there's so much in this movie. There's so much to take from. The romanticism, the realism, the 80s, Cher. It's great.
Well, it did prove very popular with our listeners. I just wanted to read out one comment from Caroline Lawrence, which I really like. She says, it's one of my five favourite movies of all time. My husband and I watch it every Valentine's Day, and we even made a pilgrimage to Cranberry Street in New York a few years ago to see the Castorini brownstone. Moonstruck presents Cher at her best, Nick Cage at his most charismatic, and Danny Aiello not afraid to play it damp. Which I love that phrase. It's a superb story structure, and as you said, the screenplay rightly won the Oscar actually in that year. And almost non-stop quotable lines. This is a particularly good one. Do you love him, Loretta? Ma, I love him awful. That is just like such a beautiful line that really sums
awful.
Up the film.
Yeah.
Or in Cher's sort of drawly.
Yeah, she's so good.
So yeah, thank you, Caroline, for that. And as ever, if you do want to get in touch about any of our film club films, then you know the email address and the Twitter, which is at LWLies.
Can I just give a shout out to John Mahoney in this movie?
Please do.
He's so brilliant. John Mahoney of Frasier fame. And he plays this guy who's just always dating young women, and he's always in the restaurant getting their drinks thrown in his face because he's just an old guy and he doesn't really care for their needs. But he's so charming, and it's such brilliant casting to have him play this kind of lame guy. Because you don't hate him, but at the same time, it's hard to respect the guy.
You know this guy.
Yeah, everybody knows him.
I love the bit in the opening when Loretta's watching him like have dinner, and the girl he's with leaves, and he's like, I want you to bring me the biggest glass of vodka you can find and remove all trace of that woman from the table. It's just, again, like these background details are so kind of great and make it really like something I feel like I could watch this over and over again and still get like the same level of enjoyment out of it.
It's interesting as well that they give what is ostensibly a comic relief character actually give him quite a big part to play later on, because he has this meal eventually with Cher's mother, Rose. And they have this beautiful moment. It's this older couple just riffing on life and love. It's something you don't really see a lot of in movies of that time, especially romantic comedies.
And they talk about real stuff. I don't want to spoil it at all because it's too beautiful and it's too rich, and it completely took me by surprise because, as you say, he was just kind of comic relief and this funny, charming man. It turns out he's complex like everyone else. It's really beautiful.
I think that the thing about the sort of older characters is, like, the whole thing is impressive to me. Like, Cher... So Loretta in this film is meant to be 37, and it's quite rare to get a film about a 37-year-old woman where it's not making her look like some tragic old spinster. She's, like, she's got a job, she's got a life. She's kind of like, oh, well, I'll marry you because it's, like, the right thing to do. Yeah. But, like, she... she's very much in control of her own destiny. You know, she's quite aspirational as a character. Mm. I love her. And she, there's this great scene where she goes, she's getting all dressed up to go to the opera, and oh, she just looks so beautiful. And oh, I mean, this film literally has, much like Mamma Mia, it has everything. Yeah. It has, you know, great music, great outfits, great characters, and Cher.
Yeah, and of course Cher won the Oscar that year. Didn't just win for screenplay.
Exactly.
She beat Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction.
That's impressive.
Crazy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Do I think that Cher deserved the Oscar over Glenn Close? Maybe I don't, but I mean, I'm happy that Cher has an Oscar.
Yeah, I'm happy it happened.
Yeah, I'm happy that it was for this movie, which I think it's rare for rom-coms to kind of get a look into the Oscars. Definitely. As well. And this is like one of the better ones, I think.
Definitely.
I think certainly for maybe younger listeners, without that knowledge of Cher in her in her pomp, you know, she had a brief renaissance in the 90s, and she's kind of seen as this figure. She's like a gay icon, and culturally she's obviously significant, but maybe 30, 40 years ago. I think this is like a really nice reminder of the quality she has as an actor and as a just as a screen presence.
She's
as well.
An all-round talent.
Sad we don't get more of... I mean, I get why we don't get more of her in films, but I'm kind of sad we don't. Yeah. She's so good. She just lights up the screen. Like, she's got that it that you always want your kind of movie stars to have.
She's really good in that movie... is it Mask?
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That movie, I don't love it, but she's insanely good in this. It's crazy. She steals the spotlight from the guy with the mask. It's, like, really good. She's great.
Okay, that was Moonstruck. We're back next week to talk Mission Impossible Fallout, the sixth film in the series. As well as that, we'll be talking about Apostasy. And in Film Club, we're taking a look back at Maurice, which is a James Ivory film. He obviously wrote the screenplay more recently to Call Me By Your Name. One of his earlier films, which is getting re-released next week, so we'll be taking a look at that.
Young Hugh Grant in that.
Young Hugh Grant, yeah, in one of his pre-Four Weddings breakout roles.
By continuing like this, you and I are risking everything we have. Our families, our names.
I don't give a damn about me.
So that's been Truth and Movies, as ever. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address is truthandmovies@tcolondon.com. We're on Twitter and Facebook as well. So please do get in touch. We do love hearing from you. And thanks for listening. This has been a 7 Digital production.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.